Thank you for listening to the Yippie Market Podcast. I'm your host, Sky Cassidy. Carla Jo Helms is here with us.
Hi, guys.
And today we'll be talking with the CEO of Influitive, Mark Organ, about customer-powered companies. Mark is an entrepreneurial go-to-market specialist. He's a CEO with a focus on sales and marketing and business development and loves creating new billion-dollar categories in technology and developing new leaders. That's not just something he's saying. I think Mark, one of the original founder CEO of Eloqua. Do I have that right, Mark?
Yeah, close. It's Eloqua, but Eloqua is it's how most people say it, so I think that it's all right.
potato, potato. Yeah. To you, probably not, though. He's founded 6 companies, raised more than 15 rounds of financing, and he's also the author of a new book, The Messenger is the Message. Mark, we're really excited to have you on today, talking about customer-powered companies. Can you give us, before we get off into other stuff, just so people have an idea of the subject, customer-powered companies. What is it that you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, these are companies that go further than just being customer-centric or being obsessed about customers. You've probably heard Jeff Bezos at Amazon talk about customer obsession. These are companies that actually invite their customers into their business to participate in really every aspect of the operations of the company, from sales to marketing to product to customer service, like literally obliterating the boundaries between an employee and a customer. And we've seen this emerging business model, and some of really the most powerful companies in the world are starting to adopt this idea and building online communities and making customers feel like they're part of the team and giving them the right feedback and all this stuff so that they are empowered to participate in the operations of a company that they care about, a product that they love.
So it's not so much a company where the customer is actually creating the product, or an Uber style thing where there's a gray line between who's a customer and who's an employee. It is more of a philosophy, kind of a traditional company where you have a product, you have a service, but integrating the customer more. Am I in the right direction here?
Yeah, integrating the customer more. And that does include product, actually. I mean, co-creating a product together with your customers is a great idea. In fact, that's how a lot of the best products, you know, have been made, is by, at least by consulting customers and asking, you know, understanding their world, understanding the pain that they're going through and solving it. But imagine if you could go further than just ask them, so what are your challenges, and actually invite them into your building to work together with your engineers to build products. That's what we're seeing some companies do now in the area of product, but also in the area of go-to-market. Customers understand how they like to be sold to, how they like to be marketed to, how they like to be serviced. And instead of guessing as to what it is they want, instead of asking them, hey, what is it that you want? Why not invite them in and have them participate in it? And with modern communities and with making things fun and gamifying, you can make it quite attractive and appealing for them to do what it is that they want to do, which is support a company and a product that they love.
Is this typically more for B2C companies rather than B2B, or can you give us some examples on B2B companies that you've seen use that?
Sure, it's for both. In our case at Influitive, we work almost exclusively with B2B. I mean, we're 95% B2B. We do have some B2C companies. But even the B2C companies that we work with tend to sell quite an expensive product that requires a lot of consultation. So an example on the B2C side that we work with is Ecobee, that they make smart thermostats. And they've created a community that is so powerful that it's allowed them to rival some of the biggest companies in their space in the world, like Google Nest or Johnson Controls, Honeywell. And it's really the power of the Ecobee advocates that have done that. But on the B2B side, we work with companies, large and small. On the large side, companies like IBM, Cisco, Oracle, and Salesforce.com, Symantec, VMware, but also some great smaller companies, a lot of them in the technology area that we work with. And what they do is that they use our technology to build these VIP communities. They invite in usually their best customers, but increasingly all their customers. They really invite everybody in give them a forum to understand how they can best help this company that they care about, provide feedback to them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in old world terms, it seems like a super robust market research ongoing pool.
Yeah, right? that's a good way to think about it. And you must have experience in that market research area. It's really, we look at where we started as kind of this idea of being a VIP club, where you invite in your very, very best customers. It's becoming more of like a crowdsourcing platform. So it's the idea is that, you know, no matter what it is you need to do in a company, your customers can help you do it often better, or at least augment the efforts of your employees, because they understand themselves well, right? Customers understand their own needs, and are often better able to fulfill those requirements, better than employees, or at least augmented along with employees. And we've seen.
I think it's super valuable because it sounds, when you first said it, I was like, what is he doing? You letting him in through the whole organization? Like, how chaotic would that be? But it sounds to me like you have a place where not really, maybe I'm wrong, but they're sequestered off, but you have really employees and staff and whoever else is really listening and engaging these guys and being very objective and subjective about it to change things for the better for the company. Am I right?
Yeah, no, that's it. That's exactly right. And you know, some people ask, well, why would people do this? I mean, we're all busy, right?
Yeah, I want to hear what you say, because I could totally see it. Like, you have to be a visionary to see that, because it's sometimes the money is in the future, right?
And a lot of companies do this really early on with like beta users or something like that. They'll say, oh, we got a beta product. We got a couple people. We got my mom, a couple friends, a couple actual clients, and we want their feedback so we know what the heck to do. You're saying take that kind of an idea, a focus group, and turn these people long-term into brand advocates.
That's right, and really scale it up. And that's exactly right. A lot of companies actually do a great job of this early on, particularly now. Like, a lot of, you look at the companies that millennials and Generation Y entrepreneurs are starting, and they really wouldn't think of doing like big email marketing campaigns and running ads and whatnot. Like, their instinct is, well, I'm going to create an amazing product. I'm going to build a community around it. In fact, I'm going to build a community first, even before I build a product. I'm seeing this more and more, where before I even build anything, I'm going to get a group of like my people. I'm going to get my tribe together, and I'm going to ask them what sort of trade-offs I should make in the first place, and get them to have kind of parenthood over this product that's created. It's exactly how OnePlus, which is the fastest growing smartphone provider in the world today, it's exactly how they got started. They got started by building a community first. The community gave them feedback on how to build their smartphones properly. And then when it came time to promote it, it was very natural for the community to become super brand advocates and make sure the product got sold. In fact, it's the highest ever recorded ratio of sales to marketing expense. They sold $300 million worth of smartphones in this case, the OnePlus One was their first phone, and they spent $3,000 on marketing. All sort of crowdsourced marketing that they did.
That's so really kind of the line.
It's like the opposite of Steve Jobs, though. I mean, I can see both sides of this. And one side, they're both successful, done properly or done in the right situation. But I think Jobs, you know, famously said he'll tell the people what they want. They don't, you know, if you ask people what they wanted, they would ask for a better horse and buggy or something like that. And then you have this philosophy of, well, we need to ask people what they want so we can provide it to them.
Well, he did a great amount of market research to find out what people thought was intuitive, even though he told them what product it was going to be.
It's actually true. I mean, Steve Jobs did do a lot of listening, not so much to what people said they wanted to build, but what their challenges are. And that's exactly what the OnePlus founders did in the community. And in fact, they're very emphatic about this. Says, hey, we don't build everything you tell us to build. In fact, we don't do that at all. What we do care about is why you would want, for example, to trade off a more powerful processor for less battery time. You know, for example,
what are they trying to solve? What is the benefit? Yeah,
exactly. Like doing what I call cultural anthropology, like really understanding these very special people. In that case, these are smartphone nerds. that were in the community, understand these special people and how they think, like what their mental model is. And that can be super powerful in building not just product, but your messaging. So I'll give you a great example on the B2B side. There's a company called Okta, which we've been working with them since they were quite small. I mean, just over 100 employees. Today, they're a $9 billion company with thousands of employees. And they credit their advocate community, the Ozone, with creating their really effective messaging that's so different from all of their peers and competitors. And one of the reasons why is that they would go to their community of quite technical people. These are networking engineers and security engineers, and would try to get in their head and ask questions like, so if Okta was an animal, like what kind of animal would we be? And like understand like their mental model. And they actually got their people in the community to build ads for them. Not because they wanted to run those ads. They just wanted to understand like how it is that they thought. The company. And one person actually created an ad that was very powerful.
Did they use it?
And they used it, and it was actually really effective. And to this day, I don't completely understand it. The idea here is that, you know, I have my morning Okta before my morning coffee, and it was a whole ad thing around coffee. But it really resonated with the community because these people, these security engineers, would wake up in the morning, and the first thing they would do before they would check their email, before they would go to the restroom, whatever it is, they would check and make sure there's, you know, that there was no security issues on the website and the product. And
that's so interesting. That's such a system admin type of personality, though, is it? What was their spirit animal? What was?
I don't actually know what the spirit animal is. But you're right. You hit the important message there, which is that's such a sysadmin thing to do. And you know, guess who populates the marketing departments of places like Okta? They're liberal arts majors, which are great. They're wonderful people, but they're not sysadmins. They don't think like sysadmins.
Right.
They're from completely different tribes.
Right.
And so that's why I think it's so important that companies, you know, build these communities, invite their customers in, and you know, essentially populate a lot of their decision-making with people who are going to be impacted by those decisions that are made.
Yeah.
I heard when you were talking about that example, the one thing I heard was coffee. You mentioned that they somehow, and I always feel like you can connect your, in marketing, if you can connect your product to coffee somehow,
it's a great idea.
If you can make, every 100th time somebody thinks about coffee, they think about your product, you're golden. But if it's connected to coffee, they're going to every time, every day they're getting coffee. It's such a business related thing. Then you just have this trigger of your brand. So when I think of coffee, the thing that I think is associated with it the most is if you market a podcast. It's synonymous with coffee.
Yeah, not about coffee. Every time you think of coffee, think of If You Market a Podcast.
It goes great with coffee.
Yeah, no, and it's actually pretty brilliant to say, hey, before my coffee. So what's even more smart, intelligent about that is that when I'm feeling drowsy because I need my coffee, then I should be, you know, checking to make sure that my site's okay. It's actually very, because the brain is just an association machine. That's all. They're very sophisticated. Yeah. Association
I think we
machine.
Need to make T-shirts with that cat that looks all crazy saying like, don't bother me before I've had my Iffy Market podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. See, this is the kind of sidetracking that that we like to do here, and just going down.
It's what makes your podcast so wonderful. I love it.
Let me jump back.
I still want to know the spirit animal.
Yeah. I'll have to get that for you.
Right. Yeah.
Jump back a little bit here to Influitive, to you, your company. Can you explain kind of what Influitive does and then what your day-to-day there is?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, what we do at Influitive is we create advocate communities for companies. So these are virtual communities that you may be familiar with some of the features. You probably use discussion boards and the like. But ours are quite different. They're heavily gamified. They're built for B2B companies. And they're really focused on being, frankly, a lot of fun. That's one of the things that I learned before I was at Influitive. I was on the board of a social gaming company, and I was just blown away by just how gaming works and the power of it. You know, like you don't have to force people to play a game. They enjoy playing a game.
It's cheating. It hijacks our mental pathways.
It's actually, you know, it's funny you say that, because I say that, you know, gamification is just feedback in a little black dress. It's exactly right. it hijacks our brain machinery around wanting, you know, to achieve things and whatnot. You know, I was really impressed for that. Coming from the B2B world, where we, you know, B2B enterprise software world, where enterprise software is like ponderous, it's hard to use, it's not attractive, and whatever. The gaming world was unbelievable. It was very exciting and moved very fast. And one of my ideas was, what if we made enterprise software a lot more like this gaming stuff? And so if you look at Influitive powered communities, they look nothing like any community you've ever seen. They're really fun and game-like, and there's videos and all kinds of stuff flashing there. And that's because just because you're a B2B customer doesn't mean you're not a human being. You actually are a human.
Life doesn't have to be boring when you're in B2B.
That's exactly right.
So, we're cool too. We're fun.
So we really focus on having a great experience for the advocate user. Those are the people that we call in these communities, that makes it fun and rewarding and efficient for them to do what it is that they actually really like doing, which is rooting for companies that they care about a lot. They want to see them succeed. And you probably have some companies like that that you care about, and that is what we do at Influitive. You know, as I mentioned, we serve companies large and small. We have about 300 customers that we work with. In terms of my job, I'm the chief executive officer, which means that I'm a servant, and I look after people here, make sure I provide a great environment for my employees to do their best work. And I'm really passionate about that, about building really strong culture. And frankly, staying out of people's way, hiring great people, staying out of their way. I love to spend my time with customers and figure out how I can make them more money and give them better experience. The more time I spend doing that, the happier I am. And that's.
I saw something you were talking about, holocracy.
Oh, yeah.
What is the word?
Oh, holocracy. Yeah. That's an experience. It's funny. You know, one of the things that I am really fascinated by is decision-making made by the edges of the company, right? I think that the most, and this probably comes back to my experience before I was in business, I was in neuroscience. I was a neuroscience PhD candidate. And what got me fascinated with neuroscience is this idea of cognition, right? And the idea that you can put a bunch of dumb things together, like neurons are dumb, right? But yet you get like they're really.
I'm gonna quote you on that. Neurons are dumb.
Well, in isolation, they're dumb, but you put them together in the right package and they're really smart. It's kind of like, it's called emergent behavior. Like if you put like ants are kind of dumb, but when you put a million ants together, they actually act as a smart, like superorganism.
Like one.
So I was like fascinated with this idea, even back when I was an undergraduate at university. And even to this day, you know, I love the idea of an amazing company that operates without really a head, you know, like an octopus, you know, their arms just, they're all smart, right? And it'd be amazing, like the less decisions that I have to make or my team has to make, actually the better this company can run because people just know what to do. Mm-hmm. So holacracy is kind of... it's kind of fallen out of favor now. But it was an idea around this about where there's no bosses and everybody.
There was a book about that was really popular not too long ago, and one of our clients got it for me to read. It's still sitting in the bathroom.
Yeah, it is actually. I think I know the book. It's written by a French guy. I can't remember.
My
right
boyfriend
now.
Put it in the book in the bathroom. So.
Yeah, funny. I don't know if that says something about what he thinks about the book, but. It is a fascinating idea, and I think there's a lot of merit to the idea of devolving power to people who have the most data to make a decision.
Seems like extreme delegation, kind of. It's not saying, hey, nobody's got a boss, man, we're all equals or something, but I'm sure you still have some bosses somewhere. Somebody's got to be able to get rid of somebody that's not doing a good job or, you know, not is polluting a team or something like that, but...
Yeah, no, and I think that's it. Like, I think holacracy, there's a reason why it's actually doesn't work. It's actually not working anywhere. It's a fascinating idea, but I think what does work is extreme delegation. I think the more delegation you do, the better. I think the big reason why holacracy doesn't work is not because of decision-making reasons. I think it's because of people development. I think that you need an org, like I think one of the
like
main
communism, human nature ruins it basically. People suck and we ruin everything. And if you give us a system where we have to be good, we're going to ruin it.
I think you probably get into a lot of groupthink.
Yeah, I mean, I think what is great about Holacracy and Extreme Delegation is that you get people who are truly empowered and can actually make decisions that are maybe against the grain a little bit. I think actually you get the opposite of groupthink when you do that.
Extreme Delegation or Holacracy or both?
I think both. I think you can get some really bold decision making that is harder to do when you have a hierarchy where everything has to go up to the pole. I think the big weakness is that you don't get people development, right? You don't get, like, I think the main job of a manager and a leader is actually to develop their people. It's not to make decisions, actually. I try to make as few decisions as I can, but I try to spend as much time as I can developing and growing people.
So they can make the decisions.
But you have people under you that are helping develop other people and making decisions also. So, you're basically leading the leaders. So they already have some structure, some development themselves. They're not floating in space, kind of.
That's right. Yeah. So I think what the hierarchy is, and the problem is that developing people does take time and resources. Like, there's a reason why the typical manager manages like 7 plus or minus like 3 people, right? And that is because there's only so many hours in the day. Like, you have to have one-on-one meetings with people to truly develop them. And there's just so much time. There's only so much time that you have in order to develop folks. And that is the reason why you need a hierarchy. You need a hierarchy because that's the only way you can scale people development. That's kind of my conclusion on right. that.
I guess the military has for a reason. You know, you have a couple people and they're overseen by a couple people. And when you go to war, you really need that kind of structure to be consistent.
Yeah. But I think you do that, you know, military is an effective institution, but even the military is really changing your doctrine, by the way, on management. Like, it used to be where the military was all about lowest common denominator thinking, right? It's like, we're going to hire, or we're going to attract whoever it is that comes in the door, right? Whatever recruits are, and we're going to micromanage them and tell them exactly what to do. That doesn't work in modern warfare. And if you look at where things are changing, there's a great book from a guy named David Marquardt called Turn a Ship Around. And it's all about how he turned around the worst submarine in the Navy, the US Navy, to being the best submarine in the Navy. So it's a fascinating book if you're interested in management. And the way he did it was through radical empowerment. I mean, as radical as you can get in the Navy, you know, it's still the Navy.
It's
probably never terribly popular also to say run your company more like the military. That's not very sexy sounding. Nobody wants to hear that.
Nobody wants to work under that kind of environment, including people in the military. And I think that's what's happening now is that people want to drive the bus themselves. They want to drive the submarine themselves. And so the more that we can build systems that empower people to do that, I think the happier they're going to be. You're going to attract better people and you're going to get the most out of them. And that is the way to win in this modern era.
Mark, I didn't think it was possible, but we went on a long tangent there, and I'm going to connect it back around to, you know, people.
This is a first for you.
people kind of managing themselves to an extent, stuff like that. Back to the customer-powered companies, it's kind of what you're looking for in a customer-powered company, it seems like, is you're bringing these customers in, and they are the ultimate free agents with no boss. They're customers.
Very true.
So they really have the do whatever you're going to do type of mentality, since they're not part of your company. Anyway, let's get back to customer powered companies after the break. We're going to go on a quick break here. We've got Mark Organ with us of Influitive, and you're listening to the IFU Market Podcast talking about the customer powered company.
SalesLoft is the leading sales engagement platform, helping sales organizations to deliver a better sales experience for their customers. More than 2,000 customers use the company's category-leading sales engagement platform to engage in more relevant, authentic, and sincere ways, including Square, MuleSoft, WeWork, and Dell. For more information on SalesLoft and how to deliver a better sales experience, visit salesloft.com.
Welcome back from the break. I'm Sky Cassidy, your host on the If You Market podcast. We've got our lovely co-host Carla Jo Helms with us.
And hi, guys.
Our guest is Mark Organ of Influitive. He is the CEO over there. We're talking all about customer-powered companies. We went on a bit of a tangent before the break there, Mark, but we tied it all back in. And I want to focus again more on the customer-powered company. Can you give the listeners a couple things they can do if they say, hey, this sounds like a good idea, but how do I do it? A couple simple things they can do to be more customer-powered.
Yeah, it's a great question. And a couple of really inexpensive things that really I think every company should do. First would be to have a dinner, say once a quarter or maybe twice a year, and just invite your customers to your best customers to talk and give feedback, right, to you about what you could be doing better, what they love about you, where you should go with your company and products. And even if you actually don't care what they say, and of course you do care, but even if you don't, just giving them a forum like that is so valuable, and they're going to naturally be more brand advocates for you. And of course, if you ask them at the end of your dinner, you know, what I'd really appreciate more from you guys is not that you buy more from me, but that you tell a friend if you like us, you tell a friend about us and help us get more customers. It is an unbelievably cost-effective way to grow your business. If you get more advanced than this, one thing that a lot of our customers do is they have both customers and their prospective customers together. And this is a very, very effective way to build your business. So imagine we have a formula for this where we typically have 3 customers, 7 prospects, and 2 of our people at a dinner. So we have about 12 people. Typically, it's in a private room in a restaurant. Typically, this will cost like $1,000. Maybe it's $1,500 in a major city like New York or San Francisco.
You've got built-in references there. You've got happy customers sitting there with people you want to make customers. That's brilliant.
It's brilliant, and it's so easy. And the rule is, you don't do any selling. So if you're an executive at the company, you talk about wine and hobbies and children and that sort of thing. You let your customers do the selling for you. And I know companies that have really scaled this up. Like literally, we'll have 3 meals a week in different cities. You'll have sometimes in the same day something going on in New York and San Francisco and Houston all on the same day.
That's getting pretty hot right now. I'm getting invited constantly to dinners that I just don't have time. I live in LA. There's no way I can drive over the hill to go to a dinner. I'll be gone for 2 days just in traffic. That seems like it's really growing. So, I mean, it must be there for a reason. I was listening to David Cancel over at Drift either yesterday, today, talking about getting in the mud. And he was talking about the same, having lunches with lunch, dinner. It's all the same coffee
or
sit down with them.
Or breakfast actually we're finding our breakfasts are actually better than dinners because senior executives tend to be busy. They have families.
Senior executives tend to be busy and they love early breakfast. That's true.
Yeah, they do. So we typically have 7:30 breakfast. It goes on till 9:30. Again, these are very effective. They're quite inexpensive. We often will do it at one of our customers' boardrooms. So we don't have to even rent a restaurant. I was at one in Salt Lake City last month, and we just had food trucks drive up, make crepes for everybody, and it was wonderful. It probably cost us maybe $2,000 plus my flight, and we'll generate $250,000 easy in business from that.
And every meal I eat from now on, 3 meals a day, maybe 4, is going to be with the customer. It's all a tax write-off. I never have to buy food again.
there you go. So I'm a big fan of that. Another thing you do that's also very low cost, in fact, it's free, is to open up like a messaging channel with your customers. So that could be over Slack or WhatsApp or Facebook messaging. And just a forum for people to, for your best customers to give feedback, to provide you insight and advocacy, and just it's a mini community that actually really costs nothing to. You need to have someone on your team probably help to moderate it a little bit, but it's a really inexpensive way to get a community going. And will often lend itself to having more of a complete community like the kind that we might power or alternatives might power. So these are things I think really every company should do that's in B2B, and it's a very high return on investment type of activity.
Right. That's again what you guys do over at Influitive, right? Is create these virtual communities to interact more with the customers.
That's right. But that's, you know, that's at scale, right? That's once you've got potentially hundreds or thousands of customers in a community. You know, but you can get started. As I said, you can get started by just opening up a messaging channel and just inviting your, you know, your best customers and say, hey, we want to give you a voice. We want to give you a direct channel to our product managers, to our marketers, to our customer service executives. We want to hear from you. And they're often delighted that you would actually consider them for such a thing.
And maybe find 10 customers, 10 prospects in the same city and invite them all to dinner.
That's great.
Hopefully they don't all say yes.
That's getting up to that point though, but yeah.
Right. Or
no,
one.
That's great advice.
Sit down with them. Yeah. My first thought was disconnect the paper shredder from the bottom of the comment and suggestion box. Cause a lot of companies, they take suggestions, but they never, tell us, we really want to hear what you think, but they never look at them. I have a thought. I still believe it, but I don't like the phrase, the customer's always right. I think I had it up in our old office. I don't think I have it up anymore, but over our sales floor, I had the phrase written up, the customer's occasionally right.
Yeah.
Because they come to us because we know the product better than they do. Now, when it comes to what they need and their problems that need solving, you got to listen, and sometimes you have to interpret it into what it actually means, like you were saying earlier. But the customer's not always right, but you do always need their feedback. You do always need to know where they're at, because ultimately you're not going to buy your own product.
Yeah. Mark, do you suggest, like, if you're opening a forum, let's say our listeners are going, I'm going to try this. We're going to work up the scale, but we're going to open a messaging channel. Do you have any suggestions as far as what they roll out when they ask? Or is it just really based off top of mind what they want to know then? Or have you found some best practices?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. What we've seen is that they often really go in directions that you can't always predict. I mean, I think the key thing is to make it feel like the messaging channel is it's not yours, it's theirs. This is their opportunity to help shape your company, because that's what you want them to do, because you respect their opinions and you know, thoughts on your company and products and messaging and whatnot. So I think that is the first thing, is to make it feel like it's theirs. I often give it like a name or an identity, because people really want to feel like they're part of something, right? So as I mentioned, the thing that's psychologically very attractive for these, they want part of their identity to be, you know, like your company. That's what, you know, in their regular day job, when they're Clark Kent, they might be like the third string accountant in, I don't know, the bowels of a state government or something. But for you, right, they are Superman, right? They're Superman, they're Superwoman.
And they love giving their advice and experience, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's so the more they can feel like they're part of your team, the more they are likely to contribute and to, you know, to really participate. In terms of often the way that we start these communities or messaging channel is about feedback. People really have a burning need to give feedback, but then it can really move into other areas of advocacy, like people telling their stories. Right. So questions like, How has our product changed your life? Right? Is a great one. And you get these amazing stories, and it's not all business, right? The most amazing stories that I've seen are the ones that said, you know, ever since our company bought this product, I actually am able to get home for dinner. I'm able to see my daughter's piano recital and stuff like that. That really tugs at the heartstrings. And because people make buying decisions with the emotional parts of their brain, they rationalize it later, right? But first they make these more emotional decisions. So you get these kinds of stories in these forums that they're the furthest thing from a corporate case study.
But you know, you just communicated the ultimate benefit of whatever that service or product was, the fact that he got to get home early or whatever it said. You know?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? Like, companies
are the ultimate benefit. It's like, that's like, I could see a marketing campaign, you know, campaign based on that. Like,
totally.
You want to get home? on, you know, get home to see your kids at a certain hour or whatever. That's really cool.
Yeah, you got to remember, I mean, one thing we tell our employees all the time, B2Bs are made up of Cs. They're made up of people. They're made up of consumers. And so, like, for example, we have the biggest celebration here when our user, when our, like, advocate marketing user or community manager user, when they get promoted, we go nuts because that is ultimately what we're in the business of doing. We're in the business of making sure that our people are succeeding in their lives. And that's, you know, yeah, so people do buy products because they want their company to succeed. But why do they want their company to succeed? You know, because they think they're going to succeed. They're going to get promotions and raises and recognition and learning and get home on time to see their daughter's recital. And so you really can't forget that. And so when you're getting stories from people, you do want to get numbers for sure. You want to get, we bought this product and we used to be, you know, here and now we're a lot much higher level. We're faster, we're better, we're cheaper and so on. But you want to get the more personal stories too and say that I'm less nervous now at work. I get home on time. My family's happier. I mean, this is really where a lot of success stories are going, where they have this marriage of both data and emotional, personal content. When you put those together, they are incredibly successful. Hmm. The kind of stories that literally are worth many millions of dollars because the sales reps love to use them because they're so effective at converting people from being leads into being customers.
So we're getting back to human nature here. It seems you're saying something that that I push out to our marketing and our salespeople here is that when we're selling, we're really selling that we're going to make their life easier or make their job easier. Then we're going to make them look good.
Yep.
And then there'll be an ROI. And sometimes the ROI doesn't happen, but if the other two are strong enough, you've got a product sold many times over just because you're making their life easier. You're making them look good. You know, they're getting promoted and they're making it home on time for dinner. You know, you've got a loyal customer there. And then if you actually bring an ROI, a lot of companies, I guess that cold, non-customer powered company is focused on the ROI and the numbers. And here's the equation. And their presentation is just going to be, yeah, you do all this work and then you're going to get this outcome and your company makes money and everybody's happy. And the person sitting there thinking, yeah, but I need to get home for dinner. This is just more work for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it was a very smart comment. You know, just because you're in B2B, again, you know, people still have their fundamental human drivers. Our ROI is important because if you don't generate that ROI, then that results in career, you know, job risk and career risk for the person that's making the buying decision. And
it's got to be a good product still and actually do good stuff.
For sure. And as an aside, like, you know, one of the things that I've started to realize as I'm diving deeper into both sort of motivational psychology and why people buy things is the importance of risk mitigation, right? So there's something in psychology called loss aversion, right? And that is people are much more focused on making sure they minimize negatives as opposed to achieving positives. And that's especially true as you get into more bureaucratic type of places where, you know, making a mistake on a job, buying a product that doesn't work can be really, really costly to your career and much more costly than the benefit of like buying a product that even generates a 10 times return.
You know, it's a really good point because, you know, a lot of times even working with government employees and governments make the decision based on, am I going to get sued? Is this not going to work? Am I going to lose my job?
And is it going to be in a headline, right?
Is it going to be in the headlines? Right. Is it going to be in the news? Right.
It's a great idea, but it might give me bad.
Very different.
Yeah. So government is the most extreme version of this, right? Where you've got extreme risk aversion in the government. You know, the more you go from government to let's say startups are the opposite. Startups, you know, I'm willing to take a massive risk. If you can generate a 50 times return for me, I'm willing to roll the dice on that. You know,
it's king of the hill, right? If you're on top, you have the most to lose. You're not going to take risks. You just want the status quo to stay the same. But the startups, their power is that if they go out of business tomorrow, they're in the same place they were the day before.
Right. And I think that's why it's so important to get, you know, your customers involved in the marketing messaging, because that is such a great way for prospects to understand that their risk is actually lower. They can see, hey, these customers are just like me. They have my title, they have my situation, and they speak so passionately about how this product changed their life. That really reduces that perception of risk, and it makes it much more likely for people to make a purchase in your favor. And
right. And what is the biggest thing that we're always trying to overcome is the rift or the divide between sales and marketing. Sales right. always hears that data. They always right. hear the buttons. They always hear the issues. They always hear the objections, right? Marketing doesn't always get it. But if marketing's having this forum, it's almost like getting the front lines data, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's good for sales. I mean, look, sales reps have been forever using referrals to generate the most powerful leads and also using references to close deals, right? So I think salespeople inherently understand the power of customers involved. The challenge there is that if sales reps have their own sort of pocket references, they may not actually be tailored, right? And you hear that a lot from from prospects. It's like, well, that's not a great reference because, you know, this person has a different need than me and has a different title. So I think for companies need to figure out how to systematically use customers more effectively as opposed
yeah.
to, and I think that's what's sort of driving a lot of our business now is a lot of companies are realizing that they can't just leave this to chance. They can't just say, well, we'll let the sales reps use whatever customers they want and, you know, use and abuse them to close deals. Instead, let's be intelligent. I can
see this being used in quality control, customer service, marketing.
I mean, the customer powered part, going back to that, it's when you have a massive pool of customers on that people on Slack or whatever it is, somewhere where they can meet and talk and interact. When it's getting to the B2B is to C, they're all consumers, they're all people. So when somebody's at a dinner looking at, another customer of yours, they're seeing another person. So it doesn't have to be the same industry, the same title, stuff like that. It's another person that's using your product and happy with it. And they can associate with them, I guess, as a human rather than what are their company stats versus my company stats. It's here's somebody who's happy with this product.
Mark, you're another guest on our podcast that has come up with very cool online tools, but actually very offline tools. You know, we've seen so much online that people are really gravitating towards that human connection of offline to
yeah.
get feedback or to do marketing or to get the name out or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you'll notice that. Thank you for that. Yes, I think that marriage of online and offline, getting that right is super important. I mean, you'll notice that there are a number of formerly exclusively online only brands that are opening physical stores
right.
for a reason. I just noticed a Casper store the other day, even though their mattress stores were their sworn enemy, they're doing that. Amazon's opening up physical stores. I think trying to get the best and same thing, a lot of great offline brands. Like I think Best Buy has really started to figure out online and has got that marriage of online offline. Right. And so I think for companies to also figure out how do we get the best of both the physical community and the online community coming together? Because you do need both. Like, for example, customer advisory boards traditionally are done physically. They're, often in a hotel ballroom and you have, you invite your 20 best customers into a room and get their thoughts and feedback on the product and service and messaging. But it's great if that lives on in a virtual community after. And same thing, you might have an online community, but have physical meetups. A number of our customers now have really decentralized meetups. Like they'll have, you could put out a challenge, for example, in our community saying, hey, we'll give you 1,000 points if you organize your own local user group in your city.
Yeah.
And
that reminds me of Infusionsoft. I remember when they first started. We've been, we were grandfathered with them with the very beginning, but I remember they had meetup groups. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. In fact,
they had the Tampa Bay one. They used my studio for that.
Oh, cool.
You're saying these things that I've seen, they were online, then they went offline, and then they had people come to their headquarters. And You're exactly right. These are things that do work.
Yeah, no, Infusionsoft's a great company. It's actually one that we work with. But they've had a great foundation of advocacy long before we got there. And part of it was that these local groups that actually started on their own, and then they made the wise decision to foster them.
Yeah.
Not shut them down and say, hey, this is a good thing that's happening. Let's figure out who the leaders are. Let's give them a little bit of money so they can buy, you know, donuts and coffee and whatever else. And actually not muckety muck in there, right? Not stick our fingers in there. Let's actually foster them and
it's really how they grew their I guess it's their resellers or whatever they call them, their partners, or, you know, I don't know a lot about it, but
yeah, it's a truly grassroots movement over there. And I think it's really wise to emulate their example. Like foster these groups. Don't try to squash them. Don't try to shape them too much. Because again, when people feel this sort of sense of ownership, I think it's very powerful.
Back to the holacracy, you're creating an external holacracy with your clients and prospects, I guess. letting them work for you, and they don't even know it. We are up against it time wise. There's so much more I feel like we could talk about, Mark.
Part two.
Yeah, we might have to do a part two on this. I want to recap a little bit here, just for the listeners. We've been talking about customer powered companies and many other tangents on that. The main takeaways here may be to, create your own type of focus groups somehow of your customers, get your customers involved in your business, not just listening to them if they leave a review online, something like that, but really outreaching and creating a space for them, making them brand advocates and giving them a platform to feel like they have some ownership. I think you'd said, Mark, by day, mild-mannered accountant, and by night, consultant for XYZ company. They get to feel really, really people like that kind of thing. We'll make a video. We have a marketing director's cut videos we make here where we turn thing into marketing videos. I think we'll make one out of the Matrix for you.
Cool.
With his by day, by night talk with Mr. Smith there. Anyway, it's been a great podcast, Mark. Sorry it flew by so fast. Fantastic.
Yeah, everyone should have a part two, whatever that part two is.
I'm happy to do that. This is a lot of fun. I really enjoyed this format with the two of you, Sky and Carla Joe. So look forward to the part two.
Great. I want to mention, Mark Organ. He is the author of The Messenger is the Message. Go check that book out. You can get it anywhere and everywhere. Everybody knows where to get books, right? check him out on LinkedIn. You can look Mark up there. Anything else that you want to mention, throw out there, Mark?
No, I think that's great. Yeah, thanks. If you go to themessengeristhemessage.com, we've given the first few chapters for free. So it gives it's an easy way to get started in making your company customer powered. And I look forward to hearing from you. So let's connect. Let's connect on social. Let me know how your customer powered efforts are coming along. And can't wait to see your progress.
And obviously, check out Influitive if you're at the stage where, you know, your company's ready to create a virtual community. Check them out. I heard from a little bird that they're great at that. Please, Sarah, share us on social media. Give us good feedback, good reviews. I think as
David Cantle says, give us some ideas. We want to be customer centric.
David Cantle says, give us a 6-star review. I'm gonna hijack that and say, yeah, give us a 6-star review as well. We don't want them to be the only one getting those. 6 stars. On behalf of Carla Jo Helms, myself, and the IFE Market team, and Mark Organ of Influitive, thank you for listening to the IFE Market podcast, where we believe if you market the shit out of it, they will come.